This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Here on All Natural, where we talk about wildlife and conservation environmental issues. Joining me in the studio right now is Jess Abrahams. He is a Victorian community campaigner for the Wilderness Society. Jess, thank you very much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me in.
Now, if you could start off, tell me a little bit about yourself and your background.
Sure. I'm a bit of a nature lover. Mm-hmm. I love the outdoors. I'm a real keen bushwalker and mountain biker, and I love to paddle and get out there. And I guess it's those experiences, Adam, where I've been out in nature and seen devastating clear fells in Tasmania, or seen rivers under threat, seen the sort of the damage to our natural environment. It's those experiences which have always inspired me to get back to the city and do something about it, try and make an impact on the destruction that's happening to our wild places.
Now, you've done a bit of study as well around...
Yeah, I've got a few different degrees in environmental studies. I spent a long time at university, not quite sure what I wanted to do, but I've got a graduate diploma or two in environmental studies, and I've even got an honours degree in environmental philosophy.
Now, you said you've always had a passion for the environment. Would you say that even came back to when you were a child? Would you have noticed it then?
Yeah, I think it was at school when I got to do these amazing outdoor adventures, when I got to go snow camping up on top of Mount Kosciuszko, and I'd have this sense of the greatness of the natural environment, and that sort of really made me think, as an adult, I want to do a job where I'm connected to this somehow.
For sure. Now, everyone's heard of the Wilderness Society, but can you tell us a little bit about the Wilderness Society?
Sure. Well, we were born in Tasmania nearly 30 years ago out of the famous Franklin Dams case, which is probably the biggest environmental campaign in Australia to protect the Franklin River. We've grown a lot since then. We're now a national organisation with campaign centres in most states. We've got nearly 40,000 members, and we're probably the leading voice for nature conservation. That means protecting wildlife and wilderness in Australia. We pride ourselves on our independence. We're a not-for-profit organisation, and our mission is to protect, promote and restore wilderness and wild country.
So is your focus more on protecting wilderness and thus protecting animals more than specifically protecting animals, would you say?
Yeah, I think our focus is sort of on the ecosystem or the environment, the whole picture. We're certainly concerned about individual species, but it's the bigger picture that we're always trying to draw our focus back on.
So what made you choose to get involved with the Wilderness Society?
I was in Tasmania about 10 years ago studying, and I got involved in a campaign to protect a beautiful piece of old growth forest. I was hiding under bridges, my friends were locking onto log trucks and scuffles with the police, and it was a very exciting time, but I realised it wasn't that sustainable, that frontline activism, although I have a lot of respect for the people who are prepared to get out there and do it. But I got involved in the Wilderness Society at that time. I used to knock on doors trying to get members, and since then have been involved in campaigns as a volunteer for nearly 10 years, and more recently I've been in a paid position.
How do you find people react when you're doing the door knocking and things like that?
Look, in Tasmania it's amazing because you can knock on the door and someone with a Forestry Tasmania shirt who's just come back from a day in the forest driving a bulldozer will open the door. And those conversations are fascinating because often those people are as concerned about what's happening to our forests as the Greenies, but they feel like they don't have any influence about the direction the industry is going, and that's towards export wood chipping rather than sort of local value-adding industries.
I guess also because their hands are a bit tied because that is their income.
Absolutely. A lot of them have got really big mortgages on their big log trucks, and the industry's told them they're going to have all this work, but the industry has been reducing jobs and exporting most of our valuable products overseas so we can buy them back at more expensive prices.
Wow. Now, what does the Wilderness Society... There's lots of different environmental groups out there. What's the difference between the Wilderness Society and the other ones we've heard of?
Wilderness Society is a deep green environmental organisation. It means we're probably a bit more towards the radical end of the spectrum. We're very uncompromising. We're independent. We don't take any money from corporations or government. And we're really stand out in... for nature conservation, that means protecting ecosystems and natural processes and nature. City, urban environmental issues are really important, but that's not our major concern. Our concern is trying to protect what's left in nature.
Is there any reason why they don't take donations from corporations?
Because that might tie us to having to go easy on someone if they're doing something bad, but we're on the take from them on the other side, and it does happen.
Okay, gotcha. No, I understand. Now, we're going to do something a little bit different today. I've actually asked you to bring in some songs which we're going to play while we're having a chat to you this hour. Now, the first one you chose is Ben Harper, is that right?
Yeah, this is an amazing song called Excuse Me, Mister, and it's probably the most scathing critique of patriarchy you'll hear from a man.
Here it is right now.
Thank you.
That's Ben Harper on Joy 94.9. Adam Barrelly here for All Natural. It is 28 minutes past 10 o'clock. I'm joined in the studio by Jess Abrahams from the Wilderness Society. Now, Jess, I believe we're on the verge of one of the biggest conservation wins in Victoria in the recent years.
It's true, Adam. It's a very exciting time. Right now, the Victorian government must decide whether to accept the recommendations of an independent body, which they set up, called VEAC, Victorian Environment Assessment Council. And basically, VEAC was asked to look at the Murray River, the red gum forests and the wetlands, and make some recommendations about how we need to protect them. They've done an exhaustive three-year study, scientific and also community consultation, and they've made a great set of recommendations.
So tell us just in summary, what are the recommendations?
Well, over 100,000 hectares of new national parks, which is fantastic. Certainly some improved environmental water flows. The Murray's not getting enough water. We need more water rushing down the Murray and flooding into the wetlands to keep them healthy. And a really exciting, a historic first for Victoria is Indigenous co-management. That's giving traditional owners a say in how these places are looked after.
Wow. So then the Premier Brumby basically has to decide whether to accept these.
That's right. He's got 6 months from when the report was tabled. He's got about 3 months left, so we're expecting an announcement soon. And what's significant about these recommendations is that there's to be a big reduction in the processes that are degrading the area, like logging. There's still a lot of logging that's happening in our red gum forests along the Murray. Cattle grazing, things like duck hunting. Amazingly, we're still shooting ducks. And even things like firewood removal and other processes and activities that are really impacting these areas.
Now, I'm going to play a bit of devil's advocate. Why is it important to protect this area?
Sure. Well, this area at the moment doesn't actually have any national parks along it. They're all state forests, and they look green on the map, and so when you go and visit them, you're expecting this area to be looked after. But actually, they're full of cattle, and the cattle are degrading the place. The trees are being cut down for logging, for firewood, things like railway sleepers. There's hunting that goes on in these places, so the wildlife that you'd think would be protected is actually being shot, especially the ducks. And the place is basically being trashed. It's being used as a resource rather than protected as a very special natural area that it is.
So it's a bit of a free-for-all. Anyone's allowed in there and do whatever you want.
Absolutely. And that's how it's been for many years. But in fact, this area is being degraded. There's more than 300 threatened or endangered species in here, both plants and animals, and with the drought conditions that we're seeing and the lack of water flowing down the Murray, we're actually seeing these areas being heavily degraded. One study said that nearly 75% of river red gums are stressed dead or dying along the Murray, so we really urgently need to do something now before these areas are lost forever.
Wow, I believe some of the animals that live in that area, there's a barking owl, there's a blue-billed duck, the squirrel glider, carpet python, the Murray cod, and also there's a parrot called the superb parrot that only breeds there.
That's right. And amazingly enough, half of its habitat was clear-felled 2 years ago, even though it's marked on the map as a special protection zone, because the logging industry is so powerful up there and so influential. They made a mistake and cut down the wrong trees, but this critically endangered bird that lives and breathes only in one area had half of its home wiped out in a mistake.
So is there any punishment for oopsie-daisy?
Sorry. No, not really.
Wow, because yeah. I guess once you cut down a tree, there's not much you can really do. You can plant new ones, but it's not quite the same.
That's right, because these are old trees and they're hollow-bearing, which means when they lose branches after 100 years or more, they form hollows, and that's where the bird lives. It's also where the pythons and the squirrel gliders, all those animals, live inside these trees. Also, when the trees are old, they flower more and they produce more food for the animals to use to help them breed.
So about how old would these red gums be?
Well, there's red gums along the Murray that are hundreds of years old, 300 and 400 years old. Now, of course, the logging industry isn't allowed to touch those, but there is a lot of young trees that are on their way to becoming the old giants. But the current logging regimes, those old trees, the young trees never get to be old trees. They're cut down before then. So we're really concerned that there's going to be a lack of habitat in the future because of the impacts of logging.
I guess it's
right,
like
now,
the circle of life. As those older ones will eventually die or something will happen to them, there'll be nothing replacing them.
That's right.
Taking their place. Got you. Now, VEAC made these recommendations of what should happen, which are great. I'm guessing there's got, maybe the logging industry probably isn't too happy about it.
Absolutely. The logging industry, of course, doesn't want to lose their free resource that they're getting. But because there hasn't been enough water rushing down the Murray and flooding these areas, the trees have actually slowed down their growth. So there's actually has to be a reduction in of about 40% or more of logging in these areas just because the trees aren't growing. So they pretend that they can keep doing what they've always done forever and ever. But in this time of climate change and reduced water flows, they have to pay attention to the environment and stop their unsustainable logging.
Now, there's other problems in the area as well, not just logging that actually affect it. We're going to talk a bit more about them in just a few seconds' time.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
All Natural with Adam Barillet on Joy 94.9. I'm joined in the studio this hour by Jess Abrahams from the Wilderness Society. We've been talking about VIAC has made some recommendations to the Victorian government about what should be happening with the red gums in the Murray area.
Yep.
Now, we're just talking a little second ago about logging and the logging industry. Yep. What's going to have they made any recommendations about what should happen to the poor people that have jobs in the logging industry?
Yeah, look, there is a timber industry up there. It's a really low value timber industry. 95% of the wood ends up as wood chips or sleepers or fence posts. Very little of it ends up as quality furniture. But with this recommendation for the reduction in logging, some people will lose their jobs, but there's been a recommendation for what's called a restructure package, literally to pay people to move into other and more sustainable industries. We're suggesting that there is some plantations established on degraded land, so there'll be a sustainable resource for these people to transition into in the long term. And ultimately, tourism is a much more sensible way to earn money than environmental degradation.
That's really interesting. They've actually made recommendations of this is what we believe can happen, so no one will lose a job, because logging is one of the things that the poor loggers are going to lose their jobs and their income.
That's right. Look, everyone at some stage or another is going to lose a job as our society and economy changes. We need to help these people make the transition, and we can do this with a restructure package. It's not a lot of money to help people get a new set of jobs in order to have red gums protected for future generations.
Now, there's other things apart from logging that actually affect the area. Yeah. Tell me about grazing in the area.
Well, it's funny. You can be a farmer up there with a herd of cattle, and if you don't have enough grass on your pasture, you can just let them go out the front gate and into the state park across the road, and for free, your cattle can graze on public land in Victoria. Now, this is a historical thing, like the Man from Snowy River up in the Alps, where you'd send your cows up into the national park up to the high country to graze. That was stopped a few years ago because we realised how much damage the cows were doing to the sensitive alpine environment. The same thing is happening now along the Murray. Graziers for many years have had a free go in these areas, and the problem is that the cows with their hard hooves trample all the way down into the river to drink, and they create erosion and disturb the sensitive vegetation along the side of the river. They also poo a lot, and that runs into the river and increases the nutrient load. But most importantly, they eat all the native grasses and flowers, meaning that native animals don't have anything to eat. And what happens is the weed species that are all through these areas are then outcompete the native grasses and plants. So what we're seeing is local extinctions of some really important plants in areas where cattle have been allowed to graze.
So there's also an interesting point you brought up, because the cattle have hard hoofs.
That's
so
right.
Whereas, kangaroos have soft padded feet,
that's
that
right.
type of thing.
Think of the weight of a kangaroo compared to a cow. And
yep.
Think of standing on the edge of a riverbank. What impact is that going to have?
It's going to push in, yep,
that's
definitely.
Right.
Another one I'm intrigued about that VIAC has spoken about is that duck hunting.
Duck hunting is really huge in these areas. Gunbower State Forest on the Murray and the Kerang Swamp are two of the three most favourite, you could say, areas for shooting ducks in Victoria. Now, duck hunting is actually really big still.
I am in awe of that. I thought it's something only you saw on, the royal families in England took their hounds and went duck hunting. But it's happening in Victoria.
It still happens in Victoria. It's called a sport. I can't see what's so sporting about shooting poor, defenceless native animals. But for the last 2 years, duck hunting has been banned in Victoria because, of course, the drought has meant that duck numbers are way down. In fact, 80% reduction in bird numbers. Right now, the Victorian government has to decide whether there's going to be a duck hunting season next year. And of course, with the drought we're experiencing, it's unlikely to go ahead. We're calling for a ban on duck hunting at a national level, as many other groups like the RSPCA and the Coalition Against Duck Hunting are as well. But duck hunters are fighting fiercely against these proposals for new national parks because they want the right one day, if there's enough water and the bird numbers increase, they want to be able to go back there and shoot them all.
It's quite kind of an archaic attitude. And at the end of the day, if it is whatever it is, if it's a sport, it's still not bringing them any income. It's not like they're selling duck meat or anything like that and making a living off
well,
it.
Well, so I guess it's a pastime. I guess local industries say that they sell ammunition and fuel to these people. But campers and recreational users and tourists also, of course, buy fuel and food. We will see an end to duck hunting. I'm pretty confident about that. It's a blast from the past, to use a pun, and it's inhumane and it makes no sense environmentally.
Someone needs to take them an Xbox or a Wii, don't they? Now, you brought in some different songs for us. Tell us about the second song that you brought in today.
Well, you asked me to bring in my favourites, yes. All-time favourites. This is a new favourite, and I'm going to struggle to pronounce the name properly, but I'll give it a go. Jeffrey Gurumul Yunumpingu, and he is the blind brother of the Yothu Yindi mob, and I saw him recently as part of the Black Arm Band in the Melbourne International Festival. Exquisite acoustic music, and this one is dedicated to Ruth Bella.
Jari Mere,
Joy 94.9 All Natural with Adam Barrelly, joined in the studio by Jess Abrahams from the Wilderness Society. Who was that again, Jess?
That was Jeffrey Gurumul Yunumpingu.
Better for you to pronounce it than I. Very fitting that we played that song because we're about to talk about another recommendation that VIAC made for the area was a historic first, basically, for Victoria of Indigenous co-management for places like the
Barmer State Forest.
Yeah.
So in other states in Australia, like the Northern Territory, if you go to Uluru National Park or Kakadu, the traditional owners there, the Aboriginal people who have looked after and owned this land for thousands and thousands of years, of course have got a really important say in what happens to these places. But in Victoria, that doesn't happen at the moment. An area like the Barmer State Forest, the Yorta Yorta traditional owners missed out on their native title claim. But significantly, in these recommendations, it's been suggested that they now have co-management, which is a role or a say in what happens to their land.
So they must be quite excited about this.
Absolutely,
prospect.
Yeah. Look, it's the best thing that's probably happened to for the Indigenous land rights for the Mildrin or the Murray people, a lot of the Indigenous people along the Murray in many years. And just a few months ago, I was camped up on the Murray at Gunbower State Forest, which is again an area that is part of it will be protected, with a traditional owner there, Wayne Webster, and he took us out to a fresh clear fell and told us about his people's connection with the land. And you know, I watched Wayne cry as he scanned over the clear fell and has no say in what happens to his land. This place is sacred for him and it's being desecrated, and he's voiceless. So what's exciting about VIAC is that it's saying for the first time in Victoria, hey, we need to give traditional owners a say in what happens to their country.
It's almost one of those things we see it all the time in the media, like when there's been an earthquake or something, you see all those people and their homes have been destroyed, and you're like, oh, those poor people have lost their homes. It'd be exactly like that, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Indigenous people, and I don't want to speak on their behalf, but we all know have been dispossessed in this country, and Victoria is probably one of the worst states for that. So even though this is a small step, co-management of national parks and natural areas, we think it's a really significant first step towards reconciliation.
So what are the advantages of having Indigenous co-management? Doesn't that put another leader, you know, another voice in the pack and just makes decisions out of the mate?
It does, but it's all about justice. You know, Indigenous people, this is their country and they should have a say. And what we do know is that Indigenous people often have incredible local knowledge of an area and an understanding and appreciation of how to look after a place. And a big part of what the Wilderness Society wants to do is incorporate traditional Indigenous knowledge about land management into how country is looked after.
I guess with having that local knowledge, you don't need scientists to go in and do a 2-year study on what the best things are, because people have been there for years and years and they can tell you.
That's true, but it's nice to have a balance of Indigenous knowledge and scientific knowledge, and where those two meet and cross and also conflict, that's probably the most interesting area, and probably in that place we'll get the best outcomes for the natural environment.
Now, I always like to finish off by telling people what they can do, the listeners, how they can help this campaign and make sure it gets across the line.
Sure.
We're going to have one last song from you next, though. Yep. What's this song?
This is a favourite of mine. It is from Little Things, Big Things Grow. It's a magnificent anthem by Paul Kelly, all about land rights and returning land to Indigenous people.
Gather round people, I'll tell you a story, an 8-year long story of power and pride. British Lord Vesty and Vincent Lingyari were opposite men on opposite sides. Vesty was fat with money and muscle, beef was his business, broad was his door. Vincent was lean, he spoke very little, he had no bank balance, hard dirt was his floor. From little things, big things grow, from little things, big things grow. The Wurundjeri were working, the
were nothing but rations. But once they had gathered the wealth of the land, daily the pressure got tighter and tighter. Carinza decided they must make a stand. They picked up their swags and started off walking at what a creek. They sat themselves down. Now it don't sound like much, but it sure got tongues talking back at the homestead and then in the town. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. Investing man said, I'll double your wages, 18 quid a week you'll have in your hand. Vincent said, we're not talking about wages, we're sitting right here till we get our land. Investing man roared, investing man thundered, you don't stand a chance of a cinder and snow. Vincent said, if we fall, others are rising. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. Then Vincent Lignari boarded an airplane and landed in Sydney, big city of lights. And daily he went round softly speaking his story to all kinds of men from all walks of life. And Vincent sat down with big politicians. This affair, they told him, it's a matter of state. Let us sort it out while your people are hungry. Vincent said, no thanks, we know how to wait. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. Then Vincent Lingari returned in an airplane back to his country once more to sit down. And he told his people, let the stars keep on turning. We have friends in the south, in the cities and towns. Eight years went by, eight long years of waiting, till one day a tall stranger appeared in the land. And he came with lawyers, and he came with great ceremony, and through Vincent's fingers poured a handful of sand. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. Was the story of Vincent Lignari, but this is the story of something much more. How power and privilege can unmove a people who know where they stand. Stand in the law. From little things, big things grow. 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 From little things, big things grow.
We'll be right back.
Paul Kelly having a bit of a rock on there. Joy 94.9, this is All Natural. Adam Barilla here with Jess Abrahams from the Wilderness Society. We've been talking about saving Victoria's red gums. Now, we've been talking about VX made these recommendations about the area that people should stop doing all the different things. What will people still be able to do?
Well, when we have national parks, Adam, people are still, of course, able to use these areas. One of the criticisms we get is that you want to lock up nature, but it's the exact opposite. We want to open these areas up for tourism. When it's a national park, of course, you'll still be able to camp, fish, four-wheel drive, motorbike, you'll even be able to ride horses. Along 1,000-kilometre riverfront, you'll still be able to camp with your dog, which is one of the things that national parks don't usually have, but there'll be a special Murray River Park that'll allow camping with dogs. You'll be able to collect firewood, you'll be able to have a campfire. All of these things will continue as usual. So the opponents to this plan for new national parks are up in arms saying you're going to lock us out of the forest. Actually, we just want to stop the things that are degrading the area. The people who are enjoying it are going to still be able to do that.
So I'm guessing the difference, because you'd think of, you know, motorbikes and four-wheel drives and horses have hard hoofs as well, but they would have to stay on tracks.
That's right, they have to stay on tracks, which is what happens in most national parks anyway. You can drive a four-wheel drive in a national park as long as you drive on the road. You can't just go off-road and go crunching over everything. That's would damage the area. But if you stay to the tracks, all that sort of stuff will be continue to be permitted.
And the difference between riding a horse and letting your cattle graze is the horses stay on the tracks, the cattle just go free-for-all everywhere they go.
And cattle are released in there to graze because they want to, you know, allow them to eat all the native plants that are in there, all the grasses. Horses, you know, are there to be ridden and then get fed at the end of the day by their owners.
Yes. Now, Brumby has been given these recommendations. He's been given 6 months. He has to make a decision. There's about 3 months left, so you're expecting a decision before Christmas?
We've got our fingers crossed for a decision before Christmas. It's much anticipated, his announcement. There's a huge swell of community support for these recommendations. Everyone thinks that national parks are a good idea. We'll be looking after these places for future generations. We'd hate to see these places lost forever. And right now, the ball is in Brumby's court. He will make his announcement any day now, we hope, and we're expecting that him to implement these recommendations in full.
Is it a case of he either says yes or no, or can he go, I pick six of the recommendations out of eight?
He may well try and create a compromise, and we're encouraging him to do the best by the environment and not give in to the self-interested lobby groups who want to continue to trash the place.
What can listeners do to help or support to get this over the line?
Well, it's really important right now that they ring Premier Brumby or even just their local member and say, hey, I reckon those new national parks along the Murray are a great idea. You don't have to be an expert to ring a local politician or even the Premier and tell them how you feel. In fact, if you log on to our website, www.saveredgums.org, you'll be able to send a message to the Premier from an online action. You can send him an email or just look him up in or your local member. Just Google them, find out who your local member is, give them a call and send a message. Of course, you can also write a letter to your local paper or the newspaper. And, just show your support publicly for these new national parks, because that's what we need, a swell of support.
Some people may be thinking, ringing the Premier like he's going to listen to me or anything like that. But what actually happens is I believe there's like a log at the end of the day of all the people. You may not get to speak to him directly, is that right?
That's right. You probably won't get through to Premier directly, but you'll certainly be able to speak to one of his advisors or someone who filters his calls. And you can say, I want you to pass on a message for me to the Premier. I think new national parks along the Murray are a really good idea. And at the end of the week, most politicians will get a bit of a tally of what issues have been big in the local papers, what issues have been big in the national papers, how many letters they've received on what issues, how many phone calls. And that way our politicians, whose job it is to represent us, get a feel for what the community thinks. And so ring up your politician and leave a message. Ask that person to pass on your message. And if it's a local member, oftentimes you'll actually get through to speak to them. And, you know, our politicians, they're not these aloof, amazing people. They're actually real human beings just like us. And it's our job it's their job to do what we ask them to do. They're our representatives. So I encourage people to participate in democracy and get active and give them a call.
So it's as easy as that, and easy. It does make a difference.
Absolutely.
Once again, a couple of websites to check out are saveredgums.org, and of course you can check out wilderness.org murray.org.au as well.
That's right.
So Jess, thank you very much for coming in today.
My pleasure.
Telling us all about the Murray and the Red Caves. Hopefully, Brumby's a smart man. I'm sure he is.
Yep.
And I'm sure it'll all go fine. Hopefully we get an early Christmas present.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
You're on Joy 94.9.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.